Welcome to the Montgomery Community Church podcast. Thank you so much for listening today. We hope this message encourages you and inspires you to grow deeper in your faith. If you'd like to learn more about MCC, you can visit our website at mcc.church.
Wherever there is a human being, there is an opportunity for kindness. Think about that. Wherever there is a human being, there is an opportunity for kindness. Those words were first spoken by Seneca some 2,000 years ago, and they're still as true today as they were back then. After all, kindness is a language which the deaf can hear and the blind can see. And so this morning, I want us to think about kindness. And as we think about that word, what it looks like, I want you to think about the people God has entrusted to you. The people in your family, the people that live on your street, the people in your school, the people in your neighborhood. And I want you to think about this. And are you daily, I mean daily, extending the beautiful and powerful gift of kindness to them? You see, he was not a man you would think a guy like Jonathan would easily befriend. I mean, Jonathan was heir to his father's throne, but David had previously been anointed Israel's future king. So one of them was not going to get the throne that they were promised. And while Jonathan was not privy to David's previous anointing, he was fully aware of David's growing popularity. He was also aware of how his father disdained every mention of David's name. And while Jonathan was certainly his father's son, he was not quite like his father. You see, Jonathan was faithful to others. Saul was incredibly faithful to himself. Jonathan was humble and kind. Saul was prideful and bitter. Jonathan was a great warrior. And Saul, well, he let others do the fighting for him. And such was the case when a giant named Goliath defied the armies of the living God. Day after day, this guy named Goliath called out for Israel's greatest warrior to fight him. And day after day, Saul cowered in the corner, just hoping someone else would face the challenge so he wouldn't have to. And that's when David stepped in. As soon as David heard this giant belittle the greatness of his God, he looked at the others around him and he said, "What will be done for the man who kills this Philistine and removes this disgrace from Israel?" Well, not long afterwards, David, though just a boy, was the warrior who confronted Goliath with a few stones, a slingshot, and the power of God. And then it happened. As soon as that stone struck Goliath right between the eyes, the army of Israel witnessed his downfall before their eyes. And the very moment that giant fell to the ground was both Israel's greatest success and King Saul's greatest defeat. Because for the rest of his life, the words spoken by his own subjects would haunt him. Saul has slain his thousands, and David his tens of thousands. And the truth of those words stung Saul right to the core. And as the bitterness grew, the more Saul wanted David dead. Friends, this is the backdrop to one of the greatest stories of kindness ever told. You see, the kindness that Jonathan would first extend to David was certainly the language the deaf could hear and the blind could see. But this signified, of course, that Jonathan's father could hear and see it as well. And this would be a problem for both Jonathan and David. Immediately after David slew that giant and King Saul had his little conversation with him in order to really understand who David was, Jonathan pursued a deep, long-lasting friendship with David himself. The Bible says after David had finished talking with Saul, Jonathan became one in spirit with David, and he loved him as himself. From that day, Saul kept David with him and did not let him return home to his family. And Jonathan made a covenant with David because he loved him as himself. Jonathan took off the robe he was wearing and gave it to David along with his tunic and even his sword, his bow, and his belt. The giving of such gifts was actually common in ancient times. These gifts signify that the giver wanted the recipient to experience the very things which had long honored and protected them. This was an act of kindness which mirrored what Jesus would later talk about when he said, "Do to others as you would have them do unto you." But you see, it wasn't just Jonathan who thought well of David. Saul's highest officers and officials esteemed him as well. For wherever, whatever mission Saul sent him on, David was so successful that Saul gave him a high rank in the army. This pleased all the troops and Saul's officers as well. But underneath the surface, David's success did not please King Saul. Not at all. It frustrated him. You see, David's ongoing success caused all eyes to focus on David and not King Saul. And every king who ever reigned in ancient times expected themselves to be the full center of attention. And how in the world could this be for Saul when his own subjects were singing about David in the open streets? Saul, he wanted all that music to stop. And this included the very music David played in Saul's own honor and in Saul's own presence. And so while David was playing the lyre, as he usually did, Saul had a spear in his hand and he hurled it, saying to himself, "I'll pin David to the wall." But David eluded him twice. If Saul was anything, he was persistent. And when that didn't work, well, Saul tried another strategy, which only seemed to backfire on him. So he sent David away from him and gave him command over 1,000 men. And David led the troops in their campaigns. And everything he did, he had great success because the Lord was with him. When Saul saw how successful he was afraid of him. But all Israel and Judah loved David because he led them in their campaigns. And so after that spear didn't work, and after sending David far away from home didn't work, Saul thought that keeping him close would ensure David's faithfulness while bringing Saul the esteem of his own people. And yet after David refused to marry one of Saul's own daughters because David did not find himself worthy, Saul tried yet another time to do away with David after Saul learned that another of his daughters had this huge crush on him. And if they were going to be married, in the mind of Saul, he was going to place a high price on that marriage. David would be required to kill 100 Philistines. And Saul, of course, believed that in doing so, David would be killed himself. But David being David, of course, what did he do? He upped the ante. He killed 200 Philistines instead. And when Saul realized that his daughter's love for David had only grown, along with David's notoriety and popularity, Saul became even more afraid of him, and he remained his enemy the rest of his days. But the same could not be said for Saul's son Jonathan, however. After King Saul commanded his own son Jonathan to kill David, Jonathan did just the opposite. He warned him. He said, "My father Saul is looking for a chance to kill you. Be on your guard tomorrow morning. Go into hiding and stay there. I will go out and stand with my father in the field where you are. I'll speak to him about you and will tell you what I find out." And after this, Jonathan spoke to his father about David, about who he was, about all that he had accomplished. And he implored his father to extend David mercy, not revenge. After all, a single act of kindness can cause ripples of healing. And that's why Saul's heart was softened. It was healed, at least temporarily. And it was then when Saul promised, "As surely as the Lord lives, David will not be put to death." So David then was brought into Saul's presence yet once again, and so there was peace in Saul's house. Unfortunately, there was not peace in Saul's land. And so when the Philistines became a growing problem, David went out again and fought the Philistines. He struck them with such force that they fled before him. And once again, this was great news for Israel, horrible news for King Saul, because it only brought David even more attention. And so after David returned home, Saul saw his opportunity, and Saul tried to pin him to the wall with a spear. But David eluded him as Saul drove that spear into the wall, and that night David made good his escape. And so as David now is trying to find his place of safety, Saul sends men to kill David whenever and wherever he can be found. And yet while Saul's attempts to kill David ensued, Jonathan, his son, remained faithful and kind to David. And that's why David eventually came back to him. "Jonathan, what have I done? What is my crime? How have I wronged your father that he is trying to kill me?" And Jonathan now is trying to empathize with David's concerns, but he thought them to be a bit over the top. Because after all, how could his father be against David when Jonathan had stood strongly by David's side? How? And so he retorted, "Never. You are not going to die. Look, my father doesn't do anything great or small without letting me know. Why would he hide this from me? It isn't so. And David just stood there, taking it all in. And then he reasoned with him. Oh, Jonathan, your father knows very well that I have found favor in your eyes. And he has said to himself, Jonathan must not know this or he will be grieved. Yet as surely as the Lord lives and you live, there is only one step between me and death. And as deeply as Jonathan believed David in that moment, he would stand beside David for the rest of his life. For as David's own son would later write, kindness and faithfulness keep a king safe. Through kindness, his throne is made secure. Oh yes, Jonathan would remain faithful to David, even though it meant his own throne would not be secure. And so together they devised a plan that if Jonathan learned his father was intent on harming David in any way, Jonathan would warn him. And in his kindness, Jonathan took things even further. He made an oath with David. He says, but if my father intends to harm you, may the Lord deal with Jonathan, be it ever so severely, if I do not let you know and send you away in peace. And while Jonathan would stand by his words, he also knew that they might cost him. He also knew that his oath might cost his own family dearly. And so he inquired of David, but show me unfailing kindness, like the Lord's kindness, as long as I live, so that I may not be killed. And do not ever cut off your kindness from my family, not even when the Lord has cut off every one of David's enemies from the face of the earth. You see, Jonathan knew that reigning as king was not in his future. Oh, David would be king. But Jonathan knew something else as well, that every new king back then, in attempts to protect their new kingdom, would kill every member of the former king's family in order to ensure that they would not have any future attacks. And so without question, Jonathan's kindness was costly. And while this was the price he was willing to pay, he didn't want his kindness to hurt his own family. David understood. And so he promised that no harm would come their way by his own hand. But then Jonathan had David reaffirm his oath out of love for him, because he loved him as he loved himself. Oh yeah. Kindness is a language which the deaf can hear and the blind can see. It is also the language of the faithful. How faithful are you? How faithful are you? How kind are you? And how could the gift of kindness be beautifully displayed in your life? Well, Jonathan, of course, soon learned that Saul intended to harm David yet once again. And so Jonathan warned David as he had promised. And after David came out from his place of hiding, David got up from the south side of the stone and bowed down before Jonathan three times with his face to the ground. And then they kissed each other and wept together. But David wept the most. He wept the most because he knew that they would never share in meaningful times together ever again. Oh, sure, there would be a few times, of course, when he would be warned by Jonathan what Saul was doing, but they would never walk together. They would never talk together, hang out together as true friends do. That would never happen for them. And then Jonathan said to David, go in peace, for we have sworn friendship with each other in the name of the Lord, saying, the Lord is witness between you and me, and between your descendants and my descendants forever. Then David left, and Jonathan went back to the town. And not long after that, both Saul and Jonathan would be killed on the battlefield. Jonathan would die as a brave warrior, and Saul would die as a coward. He would take his own life. But David, he would be king. And as king, though, David would never forget the kindness of his friend. And that's why a few years after David actually took the throne, he asked his own subjects a question which was very dear to him. Is there anyone still left of the house of Saul to whom I can show kindness for Jonathan's sake? You see, kindness is not only faithful, kindness remembers. Kindness delivers. And David soon learned that while there were several of King Saul's descendants still alive in the land, There was one who might hold a special place in David's heart. He was Jonathan's son. His name, Mephibosheth. You see, when Jonathan died on the battlefield that day, Mephibosheth, he was only like 5 years old. And while it's not really clear from the text, what we do know is that his legs were badly damaged. And we know that David then learned that Mephibosheth was now lame. So David sent for him. Now, I want you to pause here for a moment. I want you to think about the culture, how that worked. And given the culture, I want you to imagine then how Mephibosheth must have felt when he learned that the king was looking for him. Remember, all family members of the former king's family were commonly slain to protect the authority of the new reigning king. And so David's inquiry did not instill joy or hope or peace within Mephibosheth's heart. He was afraid. He was very afraid. And so as soon as he was brought into the king's presence, David put his fears to rest. Oh, don't be afraid, for I will surely show you kindness for the sake of your father Jonathan. I will restore to you all the land that belonged to your grandfather Saul, and you will always eat at my table. You see, due to the kindness that Jonathan had bestowed upon David, David now bestowed much kindness upon Jonathan's son. For not only would Jonathan's son live, he would be treated as part of David's own family. You see, I say this because to daily eat at someone's table back in ancient times signified a whole lot more than just friendship. It signified family membership. And along with family membership came the gift of the king's royal protection. But that's not all. Out of David's kindness, Mephibosheth would be granted the very land which was once owned by his grandfather, King Saul. This was kindness taken to an unheard of level back then. This was not what Mephibosheth had expected. And so he hears this and he responds and he says, "What is your servant that you should notice a dead dog like me?" A dead dog. Two sides to the coin on that one. You see, back in that ancient culture, for a man to be lame, it would mean that you're not able to fend for yourself. You're not able to really help anyone else either. That culture would consider you to be a dead dog. But also as part of the, you know, former king's family, your life was worth nothing. You were like a dead dog. So no matter how he looked at himself, given the culture, Mephibosheth was a dead dog. But due to David's kindness, he would not die. Nor would he be treated like a dog which ate scraps from the king's table. Instead, Mephibosheth ate at David's table like one of the king's sons. Yes, kindness is not only faithful. Kindness remembers. Kindness delivers. Kindness honors. But that's not all. After an uprising occurred in David's kingdom, and deceit caused him confusion regarding what he should do, matters only got a whole lot worse when a famine struck the land for 3 years. And in the chaos of everything that was going on, wrongs had most certainly been done. And David, he wanted to make things right. So in attempts to make amends, he asked those wronged what their price for reconciliation might be. Oh, they had a price. It was very high. They demanded the execution of 7 of Saul's descendants. What in the world could David do? He'd made a promise. He made an oath. He had to follow through. And so David turned them over. And as horrible as this sounds and as horrible as it actually is, David spared the life of just one. His name, Mephibosheth. His kindness is not only faithful. Kindness remembers. Kindness delivers. Kindness honors. And kindness protects. So, what might this story and what might the characters contained within this story have to do with me and have to do with you? I say pretty much everything. The Apostle Paul would later write it this way: "Be kind to one another, tender-hearted, forgiving one another as God in Christ forgave you." Think about this. I mean, if we're truly thankful, deep down in our hearts, thankful for the ultimate kindness that God has shown us, how in the world can we drift along in our lives without showing kindness to those that God has entrusted to us, even if it's difficult, even if it's downright humbling. As a kid growing up, I was a recipient of kindness. You see, my father had led our next door neighbor. His name was Gary, and he was a school teacher back then. He had led him to faith in Jesus Christ. But not long afterwards, my father was injured at work. He was never able to work again. He was completely disabled, unable to really operate like a father to me. And so my father had shown him kindness, and then he reciprocated by showing me kindness. And he became like a father to me. We did everything together. We built model cars together every single week. We played football together and basketball together. We rode mini bikes together. I went on all their family vacations. Kindness, it's faithful, it remembers, it delivers, it honors, and it protects. So what could that kind of kindness look like for you? How could that kind of kindness be manifested through your life? As you think about that, I want to show you just one more example this morning. It's an example of someone who goes here. He is a friend of mine. He is a retired pastor. And he was faced with a challenge in his life that many people would not want to face. But take a look at how he responded. And let his example, friends, guide all of us. Take a look.
My name's Mike Mullen. My wife was Elaine. We met actually in first grade. We grew up on different sides of the same street, but I wasn't old enough to cross then. We finally, by the age of 25, got married. And we have two children now. We have three granddaughters in Michigan and two grandsons in Florida. And I think one of the driving forces in my life has been the marriage vow. It was simple. I promise with God's help to be your loving and faithful husband, to love and serve you as Christ commands, as long as we both shall live. She was an amazing person. She was a stay-at-home mom. We had very little money, but she had a sewing machine, so she made clothes for the family. And she also, she loved photography, but that came around later. She also did cross-stitch, and just had set aside her occupation, her profession as a therapist until the children were older. She was a person with great integrity. So people trusted her and confided in her. And she also had an amazing ability to organize people and to make things work.
About when your wife started to get sick?
That was about 05, 06. She referred to things not necessarily by their proper name, but as things. And I was very frustrated. I couldn't figure out what was wrong. You know, why don't you use the right noun? But the doctor discovered that she was having some memory issues, some cognitive issues. We, at that point, were working out in Colorado, rebuilding this cabin. And she was very helpful in all of that and very engaged. We did everything together. We did some traveling. She had her camera. She took pictures all the time. They were wonderful pictures, the best pictures she took. Then in 2015, she was diagnosed with leukemia. When she got where she couldn't then move around as safely, and I brought people in 4 days, 4 hours a day, and people started telling us that it was time that we needed to go to a home. And I put that off, and the kids came in from Florida and Michigan, and I talked to experts and to the doctors, and everyone was in agreement that for her safety, basically, it would be best for her to be in a home. And it was just as COVID was becoming a thing. And I realized that they were gonna shut me out and I would not be able to see her. I was the only constant that she had because the family wasn't here. So I moved in and stayed there, and it turned out to be the best thing I ever did because there were so many other things I could do for the people that were there. To have the religious services, no one could come in and serve communion. I could debrief the nurses when people died, talk to people about finances, about marriages. It was a very, very meaningful time. And I kept thinking about the vows that she and I had taken 55 years before, that this was the opportunity to fulfill those vows. So why would I not be there? Why would I not be there? I believe there's joy that comes in doing God's work. If we listen to Him and kind of bloom where we were planted.
Where could you bloom? Who could you be a Jonathan to? Who needs the gift of kindness powerfully displayed to them in their life? And what might be required of you to be a Jonathan? I ask because the kindness this person in your life so desperately needs from you, it might not be easy for you to display. It might actually cost you something. It might cost you something more than you've ever thought in your life. It might require something more of you than just a nice comment or a one-time act. Like Jonathan, it might require you to set aside something, a belief that you have about a situation in order to address the truth in that person's life. Who could you be a Jonathan to? As you think about that, think about this. How could you respond with the kindness of King David? What would that look like? I mean, when have you received kindness extended to you from another, which could be reciprocated in some way? What would that look like? And if we're honest, you may need to first ask God to remind you, really, of how that kindness was displayed to you by someone. Because in truth, in our culture, we tend to be recipients of such beautiful things, and then we just kind of move on. But as we've learned this morning, kindness remembers. And once God has helped you to remember this past kindness, how could you then respond? How could you honor that person or someone associated with them? And as you step in, you know what? You might need to step into a hurt that's there. I mean, that person, because of what's happened, the pain that they feel, they might view themselves as Mephibosheth did, like a dead dog. How could your kindness step in to help protect them from the low view they have of themselves? Or how could your kindness help protect them from potential harm caused to them by another? Friends, there's so many hurting people in our world. And there's so many hurting people in your world. Kindness is a language which the deaf can hear and the blind can see. So may we never forget that love is patient and love is kind. And equipped with the love that God has shown to you, go out then and be kind and compassionate to others. And as you do so, may kindness always be on your lips. For wherever there is a human being, there is an opportunity for kindness. Let's pray. Dear God, when it comes to kindness, we have to think about you. Where would we be without you? You saw us in our need. You saw us with all of our junk and out of your kindness. You called us. You sent your son. You valued us. How could we ever thank you? And now, Lord, as recipients of your incredible kindness to us, may we be kind to others. Lord, just as you are rich in mercy, may we be rich in mercy. And just as you are rich in kindness, may we be rich in kindness. That others would see what you look like, who you are. That we'd be the hands and feet of Jesus Christ to another. Lord, the more we follow you, the more we become like you. May we be rich in the right things. In your mercy, in your kindness, for your glory. This is our prayer.
Thanks for listening. You can stay connected throughout the week by following Montgomery Community Church on Facebook and Instagram. For more information about MCC, visit our website at mcc.church.